Mr. Buchanan, reel 5. I want now to look at the first big battle you were in, which is what they called Operation Epsom on the 26th of June, when the first attack on Shur. What do you remember of that and the preparations for it and what happened that first day?
Really,
What was it like in a tank in action? I mean, just the noise, the smells, everything else about it.
The tank was on the move. It was a noisy place. But and when the guns were firing, especially machine guns, it got very choked up with the smoke, the fumes of the ammunition being fired. So you have to try and keep your turret open if at all possible. That's what we always kept it open, really, because they moved out to the closed in, and then the periscope from the cellar and the
Was the engine noise bad as a background, or was that not too bad?
The engine, I'll tell you what we found mostly in the summertime, it was very, very hot. The engine coming through the tank, it was damn hot. And the wintertime, funny enough, it was damn cold, it was all the way around, and yet you thought the engine would keep it warm. So then, still hot in the summertime, and very cold in the wintertime.
What did you wear in the tank?
We had a zoot suit. It was an overall with zipped, and it was fleecy inside, especially winter time. And you wore that.
Would you wear that in summer?
No, we just wore using battle dress or even just a shirt sleeve ordinary and inside the tank. I didn't wear helmets.
Would you wear anything on your head?
I wear it with the earphones, in the tank, we wear it in the earphones. You couldn't wear the helmet with the earphones, because it was too sore in your head, the helmet, so we just wore the uniform. In fact, we never wore a helmet at all, and we were always amazed at the Americans, and they got fined if they had their Tim Hartland there, whereas even the infantry walked about with the hats of Glengarry's on, the Scottish boys, and the English boys had just had the brown berry.
Now, what about the periscopes? Did you just have one, or did you have several? The periscope from your position as gunner.
I had the one which was only to see. There was no markings on it to date, and the telescope. I had the telescope, of course. So I looked through the periscope, and you could switch it around, turn it around, and look at the operator, the wireless operator, he had his telescope too, which is a good thing, because it gives him an idea of what was going on, and he could switch around, but I was more or less on the telescope at the time, on the target. And in the primary, he had the cupola of the tank, there was periscopes all around it, about six, seven, eight. It's only a cupola, it's only that small, and he could turn that independently from the turret. The turret can turn easily, but this cupola could be turned independently. So if my gun was pointing at one thing, he could turn this cupola around and look around him first before he,
But he'd have the hatch open?
He always had the hatch open, but he kept the flaps up. The flaps went flat, but he kept them up so that he didn't get bullets through them. And so it looked. So his danger was either at the back or the front.
How much of him would be sticking out? Just his head?
Just his head,
And he would use the cupola periscopes, not just look around normally with binoculars or something.
The cupola, to use the cupola, he needs to sink into the tank, so it's only the very, very top of his head would be showing above the tank, so you see through the helmet. But he normally had his binoculars, so you've got to get a good view, and he had a good view. That's why he was scared of the airbus, and if I got an airbus,
Now, how did, who actually turned the turret round and how? I mean, I know it sounds a daft question, but who actually moved the whole thing?
I moved it, and he had an overriding gun, so to say. But if he saw a target there and the gun was there, he would override my thing. And I was sitting there watching this, and the gun, the bullet was fixed around. He was overriding my solenoid, that thing. And he switched the target there, and then they'd say to me, like, there's a target there, John.
And what actual mechanism was it that you had? Was it a winding thing, or was it electrical?
No, it was electrical. It was all electrical. It was really fast. And
what control? Was it a hand grip? That's all right. They can look on a tank and see how you did it.
I know the commander had a hand grip, which overrode mine, you understand, and pointed them in another way, because he could see better than I could, you know. He could stick his head out, and in all of view, all I could see was this from front of him, and it was on my really square.
So your view from the tank, as you'd go forward on something like this first day at show, your view would be very limited to perhaps your periscope and sometimes the telescope.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And how much could you see? What sort of...
Very little if you're in a group or a forest or something like that, you couldn't see or you know. But if you were in the open country with the telescope and this, you could see quite far. I mean, the telescope only gave you that tunnel vision. You could only see that wee bit straight. But
so that was for aiming at tanks? Was it graded with ranges and things like that?
And the machine gun and the 75.
Were they on the same periscope?
They were on the same. It just switched from one to the other. Which is very difficult sometimes.
Now, on the first day, he mentions, I think you mentioned it briefly as well, that as he went forward, they got about 300 yards, and he spotted three hull-down German tanks about a mile away, mile and a half, 1,800 yards. And he says that he did an HE shoot because AP was no use at that range. What could you just explain? AP, no use at long range. You've mentioned this a bit already, but what?
It bounces off the tank. You see it bouncing off. AP, of course, is you can see it going through there because it's what do you call it? Anyway, you can see it. It's a tracer thing, and you can see it. And it just falls away. And it gets over 1,000 yards. It just.
Was it as close as that? And so after, what would you regard as when it would go, say, through a Mark IV or a Panther, leaving
time? Well, that would be about 200-300 yards, and even then it would be very difficult to see.
So 1,800 yards.
To be in a tank and getting thumped to one of these hunk of metal, it's not very pleasant. You know, that is the only thing. It wouldn't be very pleasant, and they would get out the road quick if they were hit it. But you wouldn't brew it up or set it fire or make them bail out, so it's obviously unless it's a jam.
But it would be a big crash.
This is a big crash, and it would shoot you up, and you certainly want to get out the road of it, because one follows another, one shell follows another. You don't just start sending one, you can send two or three in about a minute, then on the road,
So, in these circumstances, you'd call for HE. Now, HE, you mentioned earlier, this was... Had you already, even on this first day, did you already know about the setting for a bit of delay? Is that how you...
The shell, you sort of skim it along the ground, and it goes. It's only got about a couple of seconds, and then it blows up. And it gives you that 2 seconds, it's an air burst.
Now, would that knock a tank out, or would that be even worse inside?
No, but certainly it would knock the commander out. If you've got an air burst above his head, and because all German tanks are the same as the commander has his head stuck out the top, because you can see better that way, you've got a better range. You know. And that's. He told me that my shell had landed on the top of the turret. And now that wasn't, we weren't using the delay at that time. The shell must have hit him, I'm a good gunner, you see. The shell must have hit him on the turret. And that in the sense as I hit as far as I felt, and I believed him, but I couldn't even tell you because I couldn't see the damn targets, you know.
Was that because you were lower down?
I was lower down, but I could see the wood, but they were camouflaged in that wood, and I saw this flash of the shell, you know, the shell exploding, but to me it just, mum must have hit it, it must have hit the tree and exploded. But see, he said no, it hit the turret. So that we claimed one victory from that. So
would it actually have knocked the tank out?
Not really. Not unless it knocked the. If it may have. The way it depends on how it hit the turret. If it hit the turret in the top and went down into the tank, it may have wounded the gunners and that, and they would be able to.
Would the blast have damaged things? I mean, there are different points of the tank, and not all as armoured as each other. I mean, would a blast of HE or a direct hit with a faltering AP, would that damage the tracks at that range?
It would, if you could hit the tracks, and expose a shell hitting the track, and blow the track, or break the track. But again, then the tank is useless, because it's only just spinning around. So that's the thing, but we didn't know that. I didn't know that at the time, so we didn't aim for the track.
That was right. You'd be aim. What would your aiming point? Not that you could see anything particularly this time.
If possible, at the turret, between the turret and the tank.
So the ring.
And that would probably jam the turret, you see. If you can hit it correctly, it would jam the turret. It wouldn't do much. It wouldn't blow the tank up, but it would jam the turret. Or if you get an explosive shell where the gun comes out of the turret. Now, it wouldn't do much damage to the tank itself, but it damaged the gun. You couldn't fire, you know. I mean, it takes big chunks of metal out of the tank, but you might damage the gun or something.
Now, Brownlee, well, I ought to mention that we're looking here, because you're in his tank, we're looking at And Came Safely Home, Scott Brownlee's account, which we're sort of using it as a guide and asking questions, some questions on it. He says that they fired at you, but then they left. They just left, you know, rather unexpectedly.
No, no, I didn't know the format of Michael. They didn't tell very much. We don't. I'm only a gunner, just a lowest of lowest of us, and they don't tell you the history, but he didn't know in his head about the format.
Now, did anything, I mean, there's not much memory you of that first day. What do you remember you doing? Just driving about, or is it all just vague now?
It's all vague, really.
You don't remember getting to Sher or anything like that?
I don't remember.
He talks of some survivors coming back from other tanks and the condition they were in. Would you see that, or would you, again, I presume you wouldn't?
Well, I would see, I saw it today, but I don't know whether it was at the Epsom do, but I saw one crew coming back, they had bailed out, and another crew came back, and later on I was talking to him, he was saying the chaps, and I was talking to him, and I said, the tank actually was moving when they bailed out. They saw the German anti-tank gun, and they couldn't get the gun, their gun pointed quick enough, so they all jumped out, and the tank was moving. It was moving on its own, you see. And of course, the anti-tank gun blew it up, you know. But we got so, I would say scared, maybe not the word, but scared, that if you saw a gun pointing at you and you couldn't get your own gun, you bailed out. Because if their shell hit you, there's no chance, you see. Their guns were better than ours. The high velocity shells were better than ours.
So that was accepted procedure?
Well, it wasn't accepted, but
well, the officers in the tank, or the NCO, must have gone along with it.
Yeah, because he had to go out for that, the rest of the staff come out. And of course, looking after himself, in a sense, the man at the top, he gets up first, you know.
So they were with you in that. Yeah. What about, I mean, how nervous were you in that first action, and how claustrophobic is it in a tank? I mean, because there's not a lot of space in a turret, three men in a turret and five of you.
I never felt claustrophobic. Funny enough, I never felt. And you know, to this day, I do feel claustrophobic if I go into smaller places, you know, and stand this place, separate from where I am. But in a tank, I never felt claustrophobic. I felt safe in a tank. To be honest, I felt safe in a tank.
And before your first action, were you nervous or just excited? Or how did you feel?
I was excited the first time, but within 3 days, I was scared. We were all scared. I'm not saying about Brownlee, but I think he was really. We got shaken up a bit. You know, we didn't expect this is what it was going to be. You know, shells coming out of mortar shells, and even moaning minis, you know, and even their dive bombers when they dropped one, very rarely they did, but in the view they come down screaming, you know, the bombs come down screaming, you know, having to try and, I got a shake up.
But the first time you were quite steady. Well, you were perhaps steady all the time, but you weren't so nervous the first time.
No, but after that, then all of a sudden we suddenly realised this is war. They're trying to kill you. This is what got into your mind. They were trying to kill you. You know, and all of a sudden, because you couldn't see them. I couldn't see them. The infantry were all well dug in, you know, you couldn't see them. And the tanks were all, like ourselves, were either hauled down or stuck behind trees, well camouflaged, and all you could see was these tracers coming flying at you, you know.
That's
and
their AP.
And the crack as it passed over your tank head, you know.
Oh, it made a noise.
Oh, well, when it passed over your head, the crack, you hear the crack of it. It's like these Concorde planes that are going to sound, you get that sound as it after it passes, the thunder. Same that they've got the shells or even bullets. You can feel the crack of the bullets as it passes over your head, you know. It's the sound wave, the sound barrier, they're breaking the sound barrier, so the bullets really speed they're in it. And you get this dirty crack of these shells coming over there, which is not being got at, you know. So you sort of reverse down the, if you're hauled down the reverse again, so that brings your level, your tank down. But that's not easy, can you? You've got to go back up again, or change your position and creep up somewhere else so that you can carry on.
Now, that night, I want to look at general. It's tank lager. It's the first, first in action. Could you explain firstly what a tank lager was, and then what you'd do as a gunner during the tank lager?
Well, you pull into the lager, you pull into the lines. Single lines. A tank lager used to be a circle, but they found that that's not much use. So they lined.
Now, who was in the line? Was it a troop in each line?
Or maybe two troops, you know. Depending
Would it be a squadron lager or a regimental lager?
You get the squadron and the regimental, and then you get a brigade lager after the group leaders of a brigade lager. Well, brigade lager after losing so many.
I'll come back. So, would that be a squadron? Let's take it as a squadron lager.
Be a squadron lager because the fields are too small. You can lager, you've got to have this. It works all right in the desert, but it doesn't really work in that. So, really, although it's called a lager, it's really you get your up against a hedge or something, you know, and cover the tanks over, you know, the trees.
So you move into the lager position, then you do some simple camouflage, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of things have to happen at a lager. What's the next thing that happens?
Get their guns sorted out, get some hot water, and go and get their guns sorted out.
Now, can you tell me exactly what you had to do to your gun that each night?
We stripped the gun. The big gun, first of all, we unloaded the shell. There's always a shell. We unloaded our shell, and then we get a wipe with a cloth at that end. Then we got the big ramrod, big pad in the end, and you strap that down.
With hot water on it?
Hot water to... That's if you fired the gun. You don't do it well then, you've hit them, they fired it. And you give it a good scrub. And Norman, your wireless operator, and myself, and sometimes the co-driver, gives a hand to push this thing
up. Was it hard work?
And you sort of push it up and down. The tighter it is, the better, you understand. It cleans it better if you can get a good tight fit. It has to be tight, otherwise it's no things. And then that after doing that sort of thing, you get onto the machine gun, but I can do that in the morning, you see. So, and no one even go back to his wireless. And
now, just before we go, anything else you'd have to do to the big gun?
No, that was it.
Did you ever have to check the alignment of the telescope and the gun?
Yeah, we don't do that normally before going into battle. You know,
I should have dealt with that earlier. Then, what? How did you do that?
You've got a hut or something just about 100 yards in front of you or something, you know, something where you can put your cross wires onto it and you T&A the gun, what it's called, T&A the gun onto that.
What does that mean, T&A?
I know, but...
That's what you called it, anyway.
You call it T&A the gun, so that the cross wires are on your target that you're on, you know, and then you sort of put it with some notes or something. That's my message.
So you put the gun, you made sure the gun was also pointing at it.
You're looking through your telescope, you see, and you've got two wires in the telescope, one for machine gun and one for the big gun. Now, you get the big gun first, and you tee it on an object, maybe a couple hundred yards, maybe 1,000 yards away. But you've got an idea of how far away it is. You know, you're guessing at that, so you don't guess. You try and get it right accurate. And you can do that on the map, and you can do it somewhere that's around the outcome, take other measurements a mile away. You get your big gun, and your crossfire's onto that point. And then you set your wires at that, so that if you're using the big gun and using the wires for the big gun, that's the setting. Now, the machine gun's different. You don't have to. It's a smaller range than a machine gun because you only fire that up to that distance. So you're teeing in at a very close, maybe 200 yards away, and you're teeing in the machine gun because you're only using it for when about the tank area to keep people from jumping on the tank and throwing grenades at you.
Did you check that the gun was actually pointing the way the telescope said it was? Or could they come separate?
No, the telescope one is attached to the big gun.
So the first thing, that was what you do before you went into battle, not in a lager.
Maybe that's done about two. If you're not, you don't do that often. You only do it once in every place.
So if you've been a bit unhappy, you wouldn't be able to do it at night anyway. What else would the tank crew and you have to do? One thing I would imagine that was of interest to you and the wireless operator was, if you'd been firing, was replenishing your ammunition.
Well, that you have to wait until you get the echelon came up at night with the armour and the petrol, and sometimes food, depending on you. But they come up with the petrol and armour, and you would go to them and say, I want so many high explosive shells. You'd get two or three cases in black and take them open and pass the shells up.
So would they help you to load it, to do all this, or would they drive the lorry up and then you just...
You have to do your own loading, because that chap had to do it several times. So if I took the tanks, maybe three tanks, he would draw his lorry up. It was just a wee plan, because they don't want to get blown up, and he would toss out so many shells and then put the next lot. And you'd be leaving the box open, taking the shells out and pushing them in the tanks.
And that would be you and the...
You and the wireless myself and the wireless operator. And then... Well, Brownlee, he was being an officer, he was away getting further. He never saw him at that time.
So he'd be at the O group?
He would be getting further information, sort of stuff. And the driver, he would get... We all helped to load the petrol, stop up the petrol, because it was these canisters. None of us taking the hose pipe for that. It was canisters, and you had to...
Tin cans,
yeah, and you had to one of the funnel. And you had to pull your petrol by hand.
Was there any difference between petrol cans and water cans? You know why I asked this, because it comes up later, but could you easily tell the difference between a water can and a petrol can?
Oh yeah, you can tell the difference,
well, come back to that. Let's just ask. Anything else you'd have to do? So there's refueling, rearming.
Refueling, rearming. And then I had to go get a meal ready,
Would you cook outside the tank or inside the tank?
Outside the tank.
Right.
Put in a lager outside the tank.
And what would you do, say a night like that when you'd been in action?
And put them in hot water and pierce them. You've got canned puddings, steam puddings, you see, because that was heat up in the water. And you've got cans of meat and veg or fruit and veg or something. And that was enough.
Why were you the cook?
I was interested in cooking.
So you wanted to?
Yeah.
It could have been anybody, but you wanted to.
That was one that pushed myself forward. Actually, I'm not eating there. That's whoever made it, So I used them to go over to cooking. And that was usually the guns are quick to clean. The main thing was the engine and the petrol loading up, because you used a lot of petrol. Tanks used a lot of petrol. Once you've got that, then...
So, you might help with that, but mostly, once you've done your gun, you'd get onto your cooking duties. Brownlow mentions, Steele Brownlow mentions you were quicker Was that a merit of a cook in those days, to get things done quickly, in case you had to move off?
It is a merit, because they never said that to me, but I had to get it done and run. We had a system, of course, we all helped each other, you have to. The guns were the main thing. The driver never gave up the handle of the guns, but he had his engine to look after them. He got the petrol ready, so that he, once the guns were finished, he could put on the petrol, you know, and get them. There wasn't much loading of ammunition, because you never fired many AP shots. I mean, whenever you get ammunition, you never fired many, because you couldn't see the targets. And you fired more high explosive shells rather than AP shells.
Did you have to be careful handling HE shells, or were you aware that they couldn't go off?
Yeah, we never bothered. You just took it in your stride. Because we've got an officer, later on in line, we got an officer who were a fair minute, and we came across this shell, which the top part had fallen off it, and inside was spaghetti, that's the ammunition stuff, and spaghetti stuff, and we poured that out, and put it in light, and set it alight, and went, like firework going off, you know. And then this officer, an officer, mind you, he turned the shell on its end, and he stuck it in the ground, and he got a hammer to set off the cap, you know, which was, and it blew up, and you talk about these nigger boys with their faces not black, his face was just black and his hair was all burned. That was an officer, I just wanted to see what happened if when you capped it.
And that was just, what was going off was just a detonating charge, the fuse. Who, would you remember his name?
No, I'm not going to tell you him.
Anything else you'd have to do in the lager? Have your meal? Would you wash up? I mean, it sounds daft, but...
Yeah, well, you have to meal first, and then if you're done after that, you maybe have a quick lick, you know, depends. It wasn't a very dirty job, it depends on the man at the top, his face was dirty because of all the dust, and of course he was wearing goggles, we wore goggles all the time, so when you look, and two white eyes, and the rest of his face was all...
And then sleep.
Sleep, then we got the bivvy actually. They were using tires in the back of the tank, so we got them out and we got them laid out. And there was guard duties and that, so you have to watch the crews of guard.
And what would you do if you're on guard duty?
Well,
would each tank have a guard, or would there just be one guard for the troop? Or
no, it depends where you were, but normally there was one guard, one man, and each tank was on guard. You hang about the tank area, your own tank area. But one man was always a guard, and when his time was up, he'd go and shake someone else up, so it's tight on the door, and he'd swap him.
Were you armed when you were on guard?
Yeah.
What with?
Oh, the revolver. And they had that, I think.
Submachine gun. The revolver, had you had any training with the revolver? Because and what did you think of the revolver?
The revolver, we got trained there. We took off the revolver and you fired it.
Which one was it?
It was a Smith & Wesson. I had on the cover. We had to. We were only young, we were just members, and the guns were stuck on the police, and they hung low at the cowboy fashion. But to be honest, we kept the gun oiled and wrapped the oiling cloth around it so that if we pulled the gun out, you could unwrap it, because it kept it clean. So often you have to clean these fucking guns, these pistols that we fired. You know. And so that, I've only kept 5 bullets because sometimes we pulled it out and we pressed the trigger inadvertently. So to stop that, you only had 5 bullets. So the first thing you could click twice if you were fired. You know. But it's always in there. And your holster and
could you actually hit anything with it?
No.
Because they're supposed to be very inaccurate.
I hit the target, but it may have been the ankle, it may have been the head, or it may have been the stomach. You know, I mean, there's no. You see these cowboys shooting up, and then they have the, you know, the metal. And anyway, we always think that the other thing is shooting range rather than all the pack it in, you know. So that was another way of surrendering them. The bait is the first one, but the revolver is the second one. You go up to the shooting range, so you have to use it, pack it in, you know, because the German guns are better. They're Luger's, they're better than ours.